the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome to Sports Talk on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. We have a lot coming your way. We look forward to talking a lot of football, whether it be Tennessee, the NFL, you name it. But we are loaded with guests that are going to help us do exactly that. We look forward a little bit later this hour to being joined by Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart. That'll be at 3:35. At 4 o'clock, Vince Ferrara joins us as he sits in with us for hour number two of the program today. Athletes made available by the University of Tennessee. Can't wait to hear, because I've seen what Trey Smith had to say, but we can't wait to share that with you. More comments from Tennessee coach Jeremy Pruitt. We also have a practice report with Eric Kane. All that and more, including your chance to win with a Sports Fix at 6 today on Sports Talk. Jimmy Hyams, how are you?
John, I'm doing great. There is a lot to talk about. NFL last night, of course, but let's jump into the Trey Smith stuff, which I thought was really good. Our news and notes, by the way, brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people that you can trust. So Trey Smith is not happy with the NCAA because they have not cleared his offensive line teammate, Cade Mays. Smith said that he and Mays had been talking about playing together going back to the high school days when they were honored at Mr. Football Award sessions. And, of course, Mays transferred from Georgia to Tennessee in January. Smith said it was asinine that Mays hasn't been cleared, and the decision is made by people in suits that are drinking coffee and looking at papers and eating in meeting rooms while Mays is working his rear end off at practice trying to get ready for this season. So Trey Smith not happy with the NCAA. He had two different times when he spoke about that, but he wants – free Cade Mays, and that's what he wants. It hadn't happened yet. I did check with Mays' attorney today, and it wasn't an appeal. It's a little bit different, but the request for a reconsider has not been granted yet. It has not been that decision hasn't been made yet. If they don't get the request for reconsideration, then they file the appeal. Now, what's bothering me, and I mentioned this a while back about this whole thing. Let's say they deny the request for reconsideration later this week, and then the attorney files an appeal. Then the NCAA's got, what, maybe 30 days where they can turn around and make a decision. That means there's a chance Cade Mays could miss the first two or three games of the season because of the NCAA dragging its feet. So That's the situation right there. All right. I asked Trey Smith, considering he had blood clots, was it a hard decision? Well, he said it was not a hard decision to play this year. And I asked him, why wasn't it because you got blood clots? Who'd you talk to? What research did you do? And he said that COVID-19 can cause blood clots, which puts others at higher risk since he's already had blood clots. Thought that was interesting. He said the offensive line room is dynamic, and it has a lot of players that want to be dominant. He talked about Jameer Johnson, offensive lineman. He said, he's my guy. He's a dog. He said he's the type of person that you would want in a foxhole. He said that Johnson brings intensity and violence every time. He wants to punish people. He's got a very bright future, and he's an athletic guy. He also said of those offensive linemen in that room, they want to get after people. He said there are a large amount of guys trying to put someone on their back. This line has great potential because of our makeup. He said that it is an advantage to have the same offensive coordinator 2 years in a row for the first time. It's made a huge difference. He also said that Jerry Garantano is doing well and has control of the offense. Trey Smith is looking forward to seeing what Jerry Garantano can do. But he's really, really happy with what he has seen so far. Complimentary of offensive lineman Javontez Spraggins, the freshman, Smith said that Spraggins has left an impression on me. Smith said that Spraggins reminds him of a former Tennessee offensive lineman, Jayshon Robertson, with how he plays the game and attacks the game. His future is very bright if he continues on this path. Smith also acknowledged that he did have just the two padded practices last year, and one was during the bowl workouts. He said he's practiced a lot more in full pads so far. He said, thank God for that. Asked if he feels like game week is near. Smith said, nothing feels like reality anymore. Just with all of what they have been through. He did say that, hey, they know that at least 34 players have been out of each practice over the last 2 weeks, according to Jeremy Pruitt. Smith said, hey, if we do play, we're going to be ready. I'm excited about this team and where it is headed. He said that as far as his teammates are concerned and adhering to social distancing and wearing masks and trying not to contract COVID-19, he said that while I'm not a dad of any of my teammates, if we see you're doing the wrong things, we'll address it as a team. If we see you keep doing the wrong things, we'll address it at the next level. So we'll handle it, and if you don't want to listen to us, then we'll take it up to a higher level. So, which would not be good news for that person that is not adhering to the rules. All right, a couple of NFL games last night. Pittsburgh beating the Giants 26-16. I thought Ben Roethlisberger looked pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. 21-32, 229 yards, 3 touchdowns. Benny Snell, the former star of Kentucky, had 113 yards on 19 carries as James Conner's hurt his ankle. Daniel Jones had some good plays, but he also had a really costly interception he threw, too. And Saquon Barkley, you don't see this line very often, 15 rushes for 6 yards. That's all he got. Titans pull it out against Denver. Steven Gostkowski makes a 25-yard field goal. He had missed 3 field goals, including one that was blocked. He missed an extra point, so he kicks a field goal late in the game to get the Titans over the hump against Denver. Tennessee has now made 1 of its last 9 field goal attempts in its last 9 regular season games. That is awful. They also made only 44% of their field goal attempts last year. They were 8 out of 18 a year ago. Derrick Henry led the way with 116 yards. Tannehill ended up with 2 touchdown passes. John, what did you think of Frank Frangio's clock management late in that game? Do you think he should have called timeouts to give more time, or at least called timeouts to ice the kicker?
When you get to that point where you obviously – what he was doing, I can understand, as he said, it was twofold. Their kicker had struggled, and he didn't want to give them any kind of a break. So he was, I think, fully confident that his defense would be able to get the stop, although you had 3 games last year where you had the lead in the last 30 seconds that you didn't win. So where that confidence came from, and no Von Miller, don't know. I would have used a timeout, and considering that you worked it down, they worked it down as low as they did, I would have at least used one to ice the kicker, because you weren't about to get, I mean, you had 17 seconds left after the final play. You weren't going to use your full complement of timeouts then. So Vic Fangio, I like the fact that he's confident in his guys, but I also think, like many second-year head coaches, he's obviously got a lot to learn, and just don't know that he showed immediately that he learned from experiences last year. But you mentioned Gostkowski's struggles. The fifth time was the charm, and it was something to see Tannehill work the team down the field. Broncos struggled to get that last stop. They did that last year. They did it again last night. And the offense, not only did the defense let them down, but the offense had not one but 2 opportunities to salt that game away, and they failed miserably both times. It's a young team on offense, especially when you look at a first full-year starter in Drew Lock. He has lessons to learn. He loves the deep ball, but he wasn't in the same zip code as his receiver in the deep ball when he tried to throw that. Wasn't close to connecting on the big passes downfield. And Jerry Jeudy, I think he's going to be outstanding, but he learned hard. 2 drops that were right there in his hands. There wasn't contact. There wasn't a hold. There wasn't anything. There were just 2 simple drops. So it's hard to get upset when you look at the inexperience and the overall youth of the key players on their offensive team. But the Broncos are going to regret that they didn't win that game last night.
Yeah. All right, some other notes out there. The NFL threatens discipline for coaches on the sideline not wearing their mask properly. The Lions have placed cornerback Justin Coleman, a former VFL, on the injured reserve list with a hamstring situation that he has there. All right, boy, how about this at Texas Tech? So they had 5 more positive tests. Now, these are positive tests. This isn't contact tracing. This is these are positive tests. The five more brings their total to 75 since they returned in June. Now, it's been reported that only six of those cases are still active. But my gosh, that's an awful lot. There are 22 other athletes that have active COVID-19. So Lubbock has been hit really hard by that. At LSU, they had another outbreak. Ed Orgeron, the coach, said that most of the team has it. Now, is he exaggerating? He didn't give a number. He just said most of the team has it. All right, a few other notes out there. The Pac-12 could return in mid to late November. It's unlikely, but there's still some discussion along those lines. A president from the Big Ten, he happens to be the president of Nebraska, said that there is a vote coming today from the Big Ten. He then backed off of that a little bit, so it's not been confirmed. The earliest the Big Ten might start would be October the 17th. We'll see if they're able to get going, but I have not seen anything about a vote yet today, John. Have you?
I have not.
I missed that. Okay. So I've been trying to monitor that. Also, at LSU, I meant to mention this, a defensive end, Neil Farrell Jr., has opted back in. He had said he was not going to play. Now he says he is. Ohio State cornerback Sean Wade has opted out, so Ohio State loses another player. I thought this was kind of interesting. So Air Force is going to host Navy October the 3rd. Air Force is in the Mountain West. The Mountain West has canceled the season, but Air Force is allowed to play Army and Navy. They're also allowed to try to win the Commander's Cup, which goes to the team that has the best record in that little round robin. So Air Force is playing two games this year. Navy's coach, I'm going to try to pronounce it, Coach Ken, can I leave it at that?
Yeah.
Nuomatalolo said he was unhappy that Air Force can actually play for the Commander's Cup and only play two games while his team is playing 11 and Army's playing 12. He then came back and apologized, said he shouldn't have brought it up. So, anyway, I thought that was an interesting note about Air Force, Army, and Navy.
But I do think it's fair.
Which part? His complaint?
Yeah. Now, granted, the Commander's Cup goes squarely within one versus the other, that three-headed triumvirate. So,
right.
I can understand that, but yeah, when you talk about wear and tear, the lack thereof, and the much more limited potential for injury, I can see that, hey, should be Army-Navy this year alone, and Air Force is what it is.
That's where he was coming from. All right, NC State linebacker Louis Asias is opted out for medical reasons. He will work at NC State as a student coach. Also, Tulane is giving Coach Willie Fritz a 7-year extension through 2026. He's led Tulane to bowl wins each of the last 2 years, which is no small feat. As far as tennis, the French Open coming up, Andy Murray has got a wild card to the French Open. He also got a wild card into the U.S. Open, and so, which I think has been deserved. He's had a heck of a career. He's had injuries along the way. He came out of retirement, so glad to see that he's playing. At the U.S. Open, Sam Horsfield has withdrawn because he has the virus. Scottie Scheffler has done the same thing. So two have come out of the U.S. Open field. Also, as far as the PGA, and we had talked about this a little bit. So the voting of the Player of the Year from the PGA goes to Dustin Johnson. The PGA Tour Player of the Year, which is based on a point system, went to Justin Thomas. But now it's – I'm sorry. Yeah, Justin Thomas won that one. Dustin Johnson wins this one. It's also called the Nicklaus Award, voted on by the players. The players also voted Scottie Scheffler the Arnold Palmer Rookie of the Year Award. Also, some intriguing tee times for the U.S. Open, which is going to be Thursday. At 8:07 on number one, Tiger Woods, Colin Morikawa, and Justin Thomas. At 8:07, teeing off at number 10, Rory McIlroy, Adam Scott, Justin Rose. I wonder why they did that. Two marquee threesomes playing at the same time. Of course, I guess you could argue, well, there are no fans, so what difference does it make? Okay, I guess that's probably true. But that was just odd to me to see that pairing like that. Another featured pairing at 116 is Dustin Johnson, Tony Finau, and Bryson DeChambeau. So that's a look at the U.S. Open. The NBA tonight, we've got a couple. Oh, before I get to the games, at Toronto, Nick Nurse gets a contract extension. Now, the article I read said that they did not announce the terms of the deal. In 2 years, he's 111-43 with an NBA title. So that dude
That's
is
not too shabby.
Pretty good coach. 6:40 tonight, we got the Miami Heat against the Boston Celtics, and then later in the evening, we got Toronto against Denver. John, I think I heard you say that Toronto would lead by 18 and Denver would win. Is that what
you Clippers, said? Yeah, Clippers would lead by 18, and then the Nuggets would storm back and win. Because that's I've seen this movie before.
Well, spoilers. Yes, you have.
Spoilers.
Groundhog Day.
Yes.
So I'm going to go Toronto leads by 18 and holds on. So barely. Who do you like in the Heat and the Celtics? Do you think Boston wins it? Do you like the way the Heat's been playing? Where are you on that game tonight?
I think it's going to be a whole lot of fun because the Celtics, it's amazing to see the different players step up and just play deliver in key moments. You know, I thought when Hayward went down that might impact them. And no offense to him, to Gordon, but I just think that it's really been something to see that they really haven't missed him. Now, yeah. I'll say this. I think Miami is playing its best basketball, and they storm past as the lesser seed Indiana in the first round. They took care of their opponent in the second round, and I just have been really impressed with how well they have played. And so I think this is I think I'll be surprised if it doesn't go six, and I think it's going to go seven.
I would think so, too. Yeah,
because I think Jimmy Butler is playing out of his mind, and I think the Sixers are very much regretting dealing him.
Well, and the thing is, he's got some really good complementary pieces with him. They've got a lot of guys playing good basketball.
They sure do.
So I like that team. I like the way they're playing right now. And, John, I got to apologize to you. So in my fantasy draft, I took Cortland Sutton and Philip Lindsay. And guess what?
Both hurt.
Yeah, so four of my receivers and one of my running backs already hurt. I don't know how long they're going to be out, but I tell you what, I got the magic touch. If you want me to hurt somebody, get me to draft them in fantasy football.
Well,
I'll take care of that.
As I said before, I have a very similar curse. Mine is specific to quarterbacks, and that's why I apologized last year. All I did was open the door for Teddy Bridgewater. That's what I was hoping to do, is that by drafting Drew Brees, that there would be a point in time when Bridgewater could showcase his wares, parlay that into a brand-new expensive deal, and he's done that. So I'm sorry for what I did to your Saints last year, so I'll just consider us even.
Well, here's how far-reaching my powers are. I was fixing to draft this particular running back, and right before I picked, somebody else took him. But just because I considered it, Marlon Mack tore his Achilles and is out for the year.
Oh, my goodness.
So just because I considered him, he's out. So,
been there.
Yep.
It's not the Midas touch. It's a different kind of touch, but both you and I are pretty good at it.
Yep, I've honed my skills at that in recent years. So, those are our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters.
That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We have a lot coming your way, and we invite you to join the fun. 656-9900, 656-9900. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
99.1, The Sports Animal. Just because your workday is boring doesn't mean your radio station has to be.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. 656-9900 is how you join us. 656-9900. We go to the phones, and it's Jim who's up first. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
You know, before I get to my Tennessee question, I got to tell you, John, I watched the Broncos last night until halftime, and I was tired, and I went to bed. And the first thing I did this morning, turn on my tablet and see the final score and see they lost it in the last few seconds. I thought of you, and I thought of, boy, last year, didn't the Broncos lose so many games kind of like that in the last few seconds of the game? And this is the way this season starts.
Yep, they had three losses where they had the lead in the last 30 seconds.
Yeah, I'm counting.
And now there was plenty of people to there were plenty of people in black and white to blame last year because there were two horrific calls that impacted that number greatly last season. But Denver had nobody to blame but themselves, and a tip of the cap to the Titans because Tannehill led the drive and they made it happen.
Yeah, well, you said it. The Broncos, it was a game they could have won or should have won. I wanted to ask you about Tennessee football question, and with all the guys that have missed time and so forth, either because they tested positive or because of contact tracing and they couldn't get on the field and so forth. What is your sense right now of where this team is in terms of just plain preparation? Now, we've still got a solid week and a half to go before the game, and hopefully nothing's going to, anything dramatic's going to, rear its ugly head before then. But what's your sense of where they are preparation-wise at this point?
I think they're behind a little bit. But I'll say this. A couple of players were asked about that today, Trey Smith and Quavarius Crouch. And I think it was Trey Smith that said everybody's dealing with this. Now, some have been hit harder than others, right? Like Texas Tech has just been, bombarded. LSU has been really hard. We haven't heard nearly as much out of some other schools in the SEC. Maybe they're just not reporting it. I don't know. But I think from Tennessee's perspective, if you got at least 34 guys out for 2 weeks in a row, I don't know how you build chemistry. And Trey Smith said, hey, we're ready to go, and that's what he's supposed to say. You don't want somebody making up excuses, but I don't know how it wouldn't impact you a little bit to be not being on the same page and maybe not having the right chemistry and maybe having a few more penalties than you could or should. So how does that compare to probably South Carolina might be the really good question also. I don't know. I don't know how bad South Carolina's been hit. But I think this has to hurt your team when you have that many people out for that extended period of time.
Well, when the team comes out and if they make mistakes and look like there's a whole lot of rust, there might be some good explanation for it, considering that there was not a whole lot of work done in the spring and dealing with what they're dealing with now. So I'm not expecting a perfectly well-oiled machine a week from Saturday. Jimmy, I wanted to ask you a question. They made a comment during the Saints game, go Saints. I was rooting for them, and they got the win. I think I know maybe partly the answer, but it kind of surprised me. As unbelievable as Drew Brees has been, that the record-setting numbers that he has that may never be broken and so forth, I did not realize he has never been the league's MVP.
Correct.
I think partly maybe because, he's a contemporary of Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, who took a lot of those MVPs away from. Are you surprised at that, he's not had at least one?
Well, I knew it, so I wasn't surprised by it. And I guess the question could be, are you surprised that he's never been able to win one during that time frame? And I could see the justification with some others. I would have to go back and look. The Saints went 15-1 one year. Was it 2009 maybe? Somewhere in that time frame. It'd be interesting to see who beat him out.
Yeah.
That'd have to be somebody pretty good. It may have been Manning. It may have been Brady. I don't know. But the stats would have been there. To kind of give you an idea how bad that franchise was, I've mentioned this before, Archie Manning was a league MVP, and the Saints went 8-8. That's how bad they were. If you can go 8-8 with that group, you're the MVP. So, with Brees, that hadn't been the case. But to say I'm surprised, no, because I knew it. But if you were just to sit there and look at all the records, the most passing yards and touchdowns, you would think one of those years he could have pulled one, in particular the year they went 15-1, and that which might have been the same year they won the Super Bowl. I'm not 100% sure of that.
Yeah, it's kind of like the NFL equivalent of Nolan Ryan and no Cy Young.
Oh, wow.
That's a good point.
That really is. That's amazing. That's a good one, John. Yeah, I know Peyton's got five of them. Do you know how many Brady's got off the top of your head?
I want to say three. I can try to check that.
I think you're right, Jimmy.
Well, there's 8 years. There's 8 years that Drew Brees wasn't going to get it. Guys, I know you're up against the break. I'm looking forward to hearing, as always, Tony Barnhart. Guys, have a good afternoon. Thanks for the info.
Sure do appreciate it, Jim. You have a good afternoon as well. That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. And next, we look forward to being joined by Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart. That's next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Hey, this is VFL Joshua Dobbs, and it's 11 days until it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com. Go on!
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes, and we say congratulations to Shannon. Shannon heard the cue to call and is now a finalist for the Coors Light Man Cave Makeover, and that is something, Jimmy, that we really enjoy doing one year to the next. We have the perfect partner in Cherokee Distributing that makes that happen, and the grand prize winner will come away with a 60-inch television, two incredible recliners, and a mini fridge.
Yeah, and in a, at a time when we're not able to go watch football games, right? Many of us cannot. Many fans cannot. That you could have a nice man cave, right? With
that's
that
right.
Big TV with those recliners. That's a wonderful prize that somebody will able to enjoy, not just for part of this season, but also in the years to come.
Very much so. And so, again, we congratulate Shannon on hearing the cue to call and becoming a finalist. You can listen for your next opportunity to call in and become a finalist, and that'll be tomorrow morning during the starting lineup in the 7 o'clock hour. So that next opportunity tomorrow morning in the 7 a.m. hour. And Jimmy Himes, we now head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline for a very special guest.
Well, we do. It's Tony Barnhart. Tony Barnhart has been covering college football for many, many years, does a terrific job in the SEC, and we got a lot to talk about with football on the way. Tony, how are you doing?
Jimmy, I'm great. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for joining us. I always appreciate you doing that. Wanted to get your take on this. So has anything happened in the last month that might make you change your mind about your SEC projections with maybe LSU having a lot of people out, any injuries, anything that makes you have second thoughts about your SEC picks?
Not really. I will say this. When Jamie Newman opted out at Georgia, I was tempted to move Florida ahead of Georgia in the SEC East, and a lot of people did that. But given – I just keep looking at that Georgia defense and those running backs, and I just think Georgia's going to be there when all's said and done. Could be wrong, but, yeah, that was a move I was tempted to make when Jamie Newman left Georgia.
We've seen a few games that have been played so far, a lot of upsets, the Sun Belt taking care of the Big 12. Have you have you enjoyed watching college, the few games that we have seen so far? I mean, I love it because I'm a college football fan. I just want to get your take on that.
Jimmy, I'll tell you, the first game on August 29th when Austin Peay played Central Arkansas, I sat down and watched every single play of that game. That's more – I promise you, that's more Austin Peay football than I've seen in an entire lifetime. Because, you know, after what we've been through since they shut it down – in March, we just wondered if we could ever play football, and so yeah, I've enjoyed it. I listen, those two upsets by the Sun Belt on Saturday. I talked to the Sun Belt commissioner, Keith Gill, and he sat at home and watched all those games, even Coastal Carolina beat Kansas, and so that kind of stuff, it shows you it's gonna be a really, really interesting year. But it was good stuff.
Do you think Kansas will play Coastal Carolina again after losing 2 years in a row to them?
Not a chance. Not a chance. You kidding me? Not only do we pay for them to come play us, then they have the audacity to beat us. Let's not play those guys anymore.
Goodness. Tony, there's still obviously a lot of ground to cover before we get to the very first kickoff for any SEC team, but it is a little more than a week away. There's been so much discussion with the ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC doing what they've done to either get close to playing or get underway. You have the two Power Fives that haven't played, and What do you think in terms of just the optics of what's going on in Big Ten country when it looks like everybody's got a thought and there really doesn't seem to be any group of five or more rowing in the same direction these days? What has been your takeaways from all that?
Well, people are going to write books about when they write about mismanagement and poor communication skills. The Big Ten is going to be the poster child for that. They have mismanaged this thing from the very beginning. They pull out on August 11th, and now if we are to believe what we're hearing coming out of there, they will make an announcement later on today or tonight that they're going to try to return to football, and they're going to try to do it probably with an 8-game schedule where everybody else will be playing 10. It has been absolutely crazy, but if the Big Ten gets back in, it makes things a lot more interesting. I'll say that.
Considering the place in college athletics that a commissioner like that of the Big Ten has held, what do you think this does for Kevin Warren and what is normally one of the top spots of any conference commissioner in college athletics?
Well, Kevin Warren, the president's made the decision. It was mm-hmm. Kevin Warren's job to sell it, to be the front person for it. And he was put in a very difficult situation, but they did a lousy job of communicating with everybody mm-hmm. why they did it. Unlike the Pac-12, I mean, when the Pac-12 made their decision, they put out a 12-page memo that listed chapter and verse the medical reasons why they did what they did. The Big Ten, meanwhile, just said, well, we talked to our doctors and they told us not to play, and that's that. And as it turns out, guys, as you know, the parents of a lot of the players didn't accept that as an answer. So this has been a miscommunications gaffe from the very beginning.
Why didn't the Big Ten do what the Pac-12 did with communication?
I don't know, Jimmy. I really don't. To me, that this is so Big Ten-like. I mean, we're the Big Ten. I mean, the Big Ten has always has always sort of portrayed itself as a cut above the other brethren that play football at this level. So I can only guess that they didn't do it because they didn't think they had to because they're the Big 12.
Wow. All right, September the 26th. Have you mapped out your plans for that day?
Yes, sir. I'll be sitting on my couch with a flat screen and a laptop and an iPad and taking it all in.
What do you see as a potential upset right now? And I'll throw mine at you, and then you tell me which one you think. But just looking at how many people LSU has out, and you got KJ Costello and Mike Leach at Mississippi State mm-hmm. throwing it all over the park, I'm seeing that as a potential upset. What are you looking at that first week?
I'm really looking at two. I think Florida going to Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin's first game is going to be interesting. I still mm-hmm. think Florida probably wins it, but just the fact that they're going to Ole Miss and their ability to throw the football around. But here's one to keep an eye on, Jimmy. Kentucky goes to Auburn, okay? Mm-hmm. Kentucky, they've got better depth than they have had. Auburn's going to be sort of tinkering with their offense. I think that has a – Auburn will probably win the game, but I think that one, I don't know what the line is going to be, but I think it'll be closer than the experts think.
As you, as we get closer and closer, the fact that we saw some serious eggs laid by some programs that have expectations and then others looked like they were right as rain. How long do you think it might take for this roller coaster ride to subside, and how much of the impact is limited workouts, some programs hardly going with any contact at all? How much does that impact the style, level, and just quality of football that we're seeing right now?
Well, John, we saw the worst case scenario in the Navy game, the Navy BYU game. Yeah. I mean, poor Navy. Poor Navy couldn't tackle anybody. And you know what? Give Coach Ken a lot of credit. He said, we didn't tackle in practice, and that was my decision. Well, you see how – I bet they tackled after that. So that is a very, very big concern. As one coach told me, he said, look, in order to play football, you got to practice football. I mean, you can take reasonable precautions, but you have got to hit people or you're not going to know how to tackle. And so some teams go worse than others. At the other end of the spectrum from Navy – was Clemson. Clemson looked Yeah, okay, it was Wake Forest. I get it. But Clemson looked in mid-season form the other night. They are really, really good.
How weird was it to see Notre Dame open ACC play against Duke?
ACC logo in the middle of Notre Dame Field, South Bend, Indiana. How about that?
Yeah.
That is of all the stories that we have dealt with, that to me was one of the most improbable ones that Notre Dame would ever agree to it. But the honest answer is, and Jack Swarbrick, the AD, said this, they were really looking at some very, very hard scheduling issues to get a full season. And it's going to make the ACC happy. And November 7th, when Clemson goes to Notre Dame, is a date you better have circled on your calendar.
I guess Tony Barnhart, Tony with the SEC Network and also writes TMGCollegeSports.com. Tony, I wanted to ask you about the with the SEC. At the time that the decisions were made by the Pac-12 of the Big Ten, the SEC caught some criticism about delaying this and waiting and as long as they could possibly wait before they made that decision. Do you think Greg Sankey has done a good job in handling this and being patient?
He has done a great job at handling this, because you talk to the people now, you know, the folks that criticized Sankey in the very beginning are now wishing they had done it, because what the September 26th start date, what that did for you was it gave you a chance. Remember all the spikes in the numbers that we got when students returned to campus? Do you want to get your football team ready in the middle of that? And the SEC said, no. I talked to a bunch of SEC athletic directors, and they said that's exactly why they started that late, so the students get back in and a month would pass to handle the spikes that they knew were probably coming. And so Greg Sankey has come across as the patient voice of reason, who's handled it very methodically, and the Big Ten is the gang who can't shoot straight.
Well, and what I got a kick out of was somebody at the Big Ten said, oh, we have new information about testing, so that's why we're reconsidering it. Okay.
Yeah, they may have some more rapid response testing, but the fact of the matter is they were totally caught off guard by the visceral reaction of the fans and the players and the parents of the players. And they had no – the Big Ten thought everybody said, well, you know – we're in charge, and so nobody's going to question this. And I mean, they got the Ohio Attorney General threatening to sue the Big Ten. goes on national radio and threatens to sue the Big Ten, and he felt like he had a pretty good case.
Our guest is Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Tony, I meant to ask you about this the last time you joined us, but 2020 obviously has been challenging for so many different reasons. But one, something that has marked this year has been just significant loss, the number of incredible people that we've unfortunately had to say goodbye to. And I know that this has to be such a strange fall. What is it like going through the start of college football without your good friend Chris Dufresne?
Well, Chris was a special guy, and I've known him for a long, long time. We shared many a hospitality room together, many a dinner together, many a golf outing together, and he was a very important part of us launching the TMG, and we miss him a lot. What was bad was we could not go out to California for his memorial service. We plan a golf outing sometime next year, hopefully, but we miss him a lot. We do a podcast every week, and he was a sort of our ringleader, so we miss him a great deal.
Tony, one other quick question. So what are you going to do this weekend before SEC play gets underway?
Well, I had a lot of fun last weekend watching those upsets in the Big 12, and so Georgia Tech's going to play UCF, okay, over the weekend. That's a big game. Georgia Tech got a huge win at Florida State, and now they're going to play UCF at home at Georgia Tech. I think that's going to be a really good game. So I'm keeping an eye on the ACC and the Big 12.
And if UCF wins, they may want to hang an ACC banner in their stadium, right?
There you go. Absolutely. Well, here's the thing, guys, and I'm working on this column for tomorrow on TMG College Sports. Right now, there are five Group of Five teams ranked in the top 25. UCF and Memphis and Cincinnati from the American, and Appalachian State and Louisiana Lafayette from the Sun Belt. If any of those teams go undefeated, can they at least get in the conversation? Probably not going to get a playoff berth, but can they at least get in the conversation? If the Big Ten comes back, that's going to make it more difficult. But keep your eye on the Group of Five. I think they're going to get a lot more attention this year than they've gotten in the past.
Or maybe a New Year's Day Six.
They'll get a New Year's Day Six. Whoever the best Group of Five conference champ is will get one. Who knows? Keep your eye on Coach Billy Napier. Billy Napier worked for Nick Saban for 5 years, became head coach at Louisiana Lafayette. They were number eight in the nation in total offense last year. If they make a change at South Carolina, just remember your old buddy Tony out for Billy Napier.
All right. We'll keep an eye on that. Tony, thank you so much. Always great to catch up with you. Enjoy this weekend and the next weekend in particular, and we appreciate your time.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thank you, Tony. You too.
Tony Barnhart with SEC Network and TMGCollegeSports.com.
Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, we'll get a break. A final segment of this first hour of Sports Talks next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Here at The Sports Animal, we never really grew up. We just learn how to act in public most of the time.
We come back to say so long for this first hour of Sports Talk. With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. We've got a lot more coming your way. Up next, it's our own Vince Ferrara as he joins us for hour number two of the program on 99.1 The Sports Animal.